Right, so hopefully that got recorded okay. I've been having problems with this platform, which is why it's taken me a while to get back to you folks. So it's time again for one of our little chats about which we are so well known at this point. Tonight I want to talk about nature versus nurture, or how much heredity plays versus environment and learning in certain disorders, because I get this a lot, and folks will oftentimes ask me about this both in my practice and in conversations I have with folks in various environments. So I thought I would go ahead and address this, even though I sort of have talked about this in some scenarios in the body of some of the podcast I've done previously. I wanted to talk about it tonight in specific. And obviously the reason I chose the intro was because of the nature sort of the beast in a way. Tonight I want to focus on a couple of disorders that tend to be more, if you will, genetically loaded versus environmentally loaded, or at least equally balanced in some cases. I mean, the bottom line factor that you have to look at all this is, you know, what does somebody come to the table with, and what is offered to them in the environment? Because I sort of look at this very much as I would somebody who's got a gift. So, you know, if you have a kid, for example, who has an innate gift to be a great athlete or a great musician or sculptor or dancer or whatever, you know, that person may never get to exhibit these character traits and physiological gifts unless they're given the opportunity to practice them or somebody to help teach them or find them or whatever. So just because they're born with a specific gift for these sorts of things doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get a chance to exhibit it in the natural environment, so to speak, you know, which sort of goes back to Gray's elegy written in a country churchyard, which happens to be one of my favorite poems, where he talks about, you know, what mute and glorious Milton may be lying here in the graveyard. So he goes to a country graveyard and says, you know, basically because of these people's social status and the way they were born, who knows what great poets or scholars or generals or whatever they would have made, but they didn't have the opportunity to do that because they were born in a so-called lower class and relegated to being bakers or, you know, cobblers or, you know, working in a forge, tending to horses or whatever. So you never know what they might have been had environment and their status at birth, which, you know, back in those days was much more important in that sort of thing than it is today, although there certainly is an element of that, which, of course, is part of what's going to talk about whether somebody gets to display a particular trait or not, whether that trait is beneficial for them and or society, or whether that trait is not beneficial for them and or society. So I want to focus on a couple of disorders here that most commonly get seen in the press and in my practice and in questions I get from parents or, you know, teachers or, you know, kids I run groups with or whatever. So I'm going to start off with probably, for lack of a better term, the more genetically loaded stuff and kind of move over. So I'm going to start with certain cognitive wiring issues. So obviously, you know, if there's something wrong developmentally and certain disorders do or don't run in your family, you know, obviously if you have some kind of birth issue, trauma, you know, unnatural formulation of the juices in the amniotic sac, yada, 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 you obviously can come out with things like mental retardation or brain damage of some sorts, or blind, or, you know, missing a leg or whatever. Those things are a lot more rare nowadays just because of the state of medicine. But, you know, as some of you may know, you know, even as late as the 40s and 50s, women were given things to make pregnancies better that caused thalidomide, that caused malformed babies, so-called teratogens, birth defects. And there's, you know, a lot of drugs even today that are linked to certain kinds of birth defects. So, I mean, obviously, if you have a tissue-type damage, so-called organic, and most of you have heard me bitch about this before, but organic does not mean healthy. It means carbon compound, right, of which we are all organic creatures. So obviously, if we have organic damage, it means we have some kind of tissue or cell deformation or biochemical brain fart in case of emotional cognitive disorders. So obviously, you know, any drug that you take can cause, you know, has the potential to cause side effects, which in some cases can cause damage to the unborn fetus if you're a mom, or get genetically passed on. What most people see passed on in terms of families is an increased likelihood. So just because your parents or grandparents or cousin or nephew or whatever has a certain disorder, and that disorder happens to have a genetic loading to it, which means it just means you're more likely to get it, right? That's called, you know, predisposition, which means you have a higher likelihood than the average person in the quote-unquote normal population of your same cohort or peer group to get the disorder. So certain disorders are more predisposed or more genetically loaded than others. And so, you know, if you have a family history of autism, let's say, or Asperger's, which of course the folks in the DSM-5 that's come out in their infinite wisdom has determined doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, right. And let me know when Elvis gets here too. Oops, did I say that? At any rate, if you have one of those disorders previously known as, and or a disorder still considered a disorder by a book which has, in my opinion, become too politically and socially correct, but that's just my personal beef, so we won't go into that. But be that as it may, certain disorders certainly have a more genetic loading. The developmental delay disorders, the so-called Asperger's, which used to exist that they claim doesn't exist anymore, autism, things like mental retardation, those sort of things, those things are obviously have a genetic loading, but so does ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, right? So does schizophrenia, so does bipolar disorder, so do the cluster B personality disorders, the infamous borderline, antisocial, narcissistic, and histrionic personalities, the dreaded cluster Bs, which I'm not sure if some of those still exist in DSM-5 or not, because they've mucked DSM-5 up so much, in my personal opinion, that it's almost unrecognizable, which is why I boycotted it. But that's another story, and as I said, this is not a political rant for me to get on my political and socially inappropriate soapbox. But be that as it may, those disorders have a pretty high genetic loading, as does bipolar disorder, which most of you know used to be called back in the day manic depression, and certain depression disorders and certain anxiety disorders. Now, as some of you who've heard my anxiety disorder podcast know, the anxiety disorders include things like obsessive compulsive disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder, in addition to things like the phobias and the panic disorders and the generalized anxiety disorder. So if you have one of those in your family tree, you know, particularly if you have it on both sides of your family, you have a more likelihood or predisposition to be born with, if you will, a tendency to get those sorts of things, or I like to refer to it a genetic weakness or a genetic susceptibility to those kinds of disorders. The same thing is true with addictions, by the way, right? But we already know that a vast majority of people who have the potential, the predisposition, the increased likelihood of developing one of these disorders doesn't necessarily get the disorder. In fact, everybody that has this far from gets these develops these disorders, right? And on top of that, there are, of course, people who don't have the genetic predisposition. I had a hard time getting that one out. That's what she said. So, yeah, I know. My jokes haven't gotten any better, and that's probably not going to improve. Get the disorders despite the fact that they don't have necessarily a genetic loading for those, right? So if you have a bunch of stuff that kind of hits you, you know, all at one time, and you feel overwhelmed and you start to get really sad and it occurs for a long period of time, or you get some traumatic type events, happen. You know, obviously you can develop PTSD, which is an anxiety disorder. You can develop a depression disorder or dysthymic disorder, which is kind of a wimpy form of depression that doesn't quite meet the depression criteria, as I've talked about in my depression podcast. So any of you who have an interest in that, you may want to go back and check that out. But be that as it may, you know, certainly folks who don't have genetic predispositions for those can develop those disorders, right? If you have enough crazy things happen to you, you know, you can essentially, quote unquote, go crazy, you know, have a schizophrenic break if you have too much stress and the stress is of the right nature that sort of trips your, you know, genetic overload trigger that your brain's able to deal with, whatever. It's pretty rare to see somebody who doesn't have bipolar disorder somewhere in their family developing bipolar disorder. That's pretty much, I would think, an almost impossibility. It just as if you don't have the, you know, the gene for ADHD, you can't get ADHD from eating too much sugar. Okay, now sugar, as most of you know, and have heard me rave and rant during my addiction podcast, is the most addictive and nasty drug on the flipping planet. And I'm not going to go into detail about it again. It's just it kills and disables and causes all kind of medical problems, 10 times worse than all of the drugs on the planet combined. So it is clearly a nasty thing that is addictive as heck and causes all kinds of physical ailments in middle age and late life, particularly if you have physiological predispositions for certain disorders like high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, hypoglycemia, multi-infarcts, diabetes, yada, 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 heart attacks, you know, that kind of thing. So obviously you can develop late onset diabetes, right, if you eat a boatload of sugar and do all kind of crappy food that turns into sugar, like white grains, and, you know, white breads and pastas and all this kind of stuff that isn't whole wheat, yada, yada, yada. So you can certainly develop these disorders. You know, you can become an alcoholic if you drink every freaking day of your life or every other day or whatever. You drink, you know, copious amounts of alcohol or do copious amounts of other substances. It's quite easy for you to develop an addictive disorder, right, even if you don't have the addiction predisposition in your gene pool, so to speak. So most of these disorders you can develop through poor life choices, which is how the vast majority of folks develop these things, right? Now, if you also have a genetic loading that makes you more likely to have these things, so let's say depression is something that tends to run in your family, you know, and anxiety disorders tend to run in your family, or addictive disorders tend to run in family, then obviously you're much more at risk than the average population for developing these things. And most of you folks have heard this before. This is why I don't, you know, do illicit drugs and never have been drunk, stoned, tried pot, or anything else, because addictions run on both sides of my family. So I just don't want to tempt fate, and so I made a conscious decision not to do those many, 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 many years ago, right? Which kind of ties into my thing, you know, this concept that addictions are diseases is crap, and we've already known it's crap for years of research, but of course we as Americans like people to blame for our stuff. That's my personal opinion. And so we like to hold on to this crazy-ass disease model, which never was true. So, at any rate, you know, I don't develop addictions despite the fact that they run on both sides of my family, right? I don't have depression despite the fact that depression's run on my mom's side of the family. So, you know, the good news is I didn't get the ADHD gene despite the fact that the majority of the males on my father's side of the family had that. I was a lucky stiff in that regard. What I did, however, get was this lovely sleep circadian rhythm sleep disorder that my mom's side of the family has. So it didn't totally dodge the bullet. And certain things, if you have it in your gene pool, like ADHD and you have the manifest gene for the sleep disorder, you're going to get it. There's nothing you can do to avoid it. You're just going to get it. It just depends on how much of it you're going to get, how bad is it going to be, and how intrusive is it going to be in your life, and or how many coping skills do you have to deal with it. Which brings me to the second part of this, which has to do with this concept called resiliency, which is somebody's ability in common sense linguistics to bounce back from the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, as Shakespeare might say. So some of us just seem to have a higher level of resiliency than other folks. And if you're one of those people that is, you know, very resilient, and despite the fact that, you know, most people in your family are cluster Bs and alcoholics and just general assholes, which, you know, I have yet to see as a disorder in the DSM or the ICD or any other book, and you manage to evade, escape, and avoid developing those, woohoo to you, you probably have a very large resiliency factor. Or some people who go into really stressful scenarios and don't get PTSD, you know, my hat's off to you folks, because the resilient folks are not as prolific in our population as we might think they are. And to date, at least in my conscious awareness, we still haven't decided what the resiliency, quote-unquote, gene is like and who gets it and who determines it. I know that several years ago there was longitudinal studies done looking at inner-city youth who were really poor of a variety of racial and ethnic backgrounds who made it out without becoming pimps or hookers or gangsters, whatever. And they made it out in spite of their environment and handicaps and whatever. And those folks were called, quote unquote, resilient. And we still don't really know, you know, what causes that to happen. We do know that resilient people have certain set of traits that seem to buffer them from the stuff that the rest of us mere mortals tend to get bitch smacked with, as I like to call it. You know, and those being their ability to see the long picture. So even though the road in front of them looks really dark, they can look somehow in the distance and see a light at the so-called end of the tunnel. And they go, you know what, if I just persist long enough, I can reach the light in the end of that tunnel. So they also have this sense of survival that I can hold on long enough, I can get to that end. It's not an inescapable or unattainable goal for me to get out of this stuff, right? That it's that this stuff is therefore temporary. It's not a permanent fixture in my environment. So maybe I live in a poor side of town or in a, you know, ghetto neighborhood. Maybe I'm never going to get out of this ghetto neighborhood very much, but I can still survive well in the neighborhood. I can still become an honest citizen, yada, 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 yada. And so they have an ability to see their misfortune as temporary, short-term, as copable at the end of the tunnel, as making it out. Those folks also tended to have a sense of themselves as mattering, as being somebody of worth, the sense of self-efficacy, self-worth, that they could make it and that they mattered. The other thing that most of these folks had was some sort of external role model that they used to sort of look up to when the fit hit the shan for them. And sometimes that role model was a live role model in their neighborhood, a neighbor, the upstairs babysitter, the guy that ran the post office or worked in the post office across the street or worked in the bakery or, you know, delivered groceries to their house or picked up garbage, or it could be somebody on TV, a football or basketball or rap or rock star, could be some fictional character, but it was someone with whom they identified that somehow allowed them to say, if this character can do it fictional or otherwise, you know what, I can do it too. I'm enough like this character that I can survive. This character survived. I'm going to survive too. And it's a sense of I can make it, and I'm going to use this external role model sort of as my guide, my icon, if you will, to help me get through this sort of thing. So these are traits that most folks who are resilient seem to have, then that allows them to overcome things that the rest of us would not be able to do. So, you know, you certainly have folks who have a higher level of resiliency in the population than the rest of us. You have folks who have a genetic loading for certain disorders, whether they're, you know, the cluster B personality disorders, the anxiety, the depression, the schizophrenia, the addictions, whatever, who never develop those things. And really, it's kind of a combination of two, because just because you have a genetic likelihood or predisposition or higher risk factor in the population, right, you may have a lot of that risk factor, you may have a small amount of that risk factor, right? And sort of general rule of thumb is, you know, if it's on one side of your family, that's not great. If it's on both sides of your family, that's a really good index of things you need to be aware of. And rather than take this defeatist, oh my God, addictions run on both sides of my family, I guess that means I'm just going to be an addict. Well, shit, I might as well go ahead and start using drugs now, right? No. That's your cue to be extra careful. So I tell all these drug addicts that I work with, and alcoholics and sexaholics or whatever your addiction of choice is, whether it's AA or sex or drugs or God or, you know, alcohol or cigarettes or food or texting or what guitars or whatever, I tell these folks, you know, you made a conscious choice to do this as an escape avoidance tool rather than dealing with the stuff that you're running from, whether it's low self-esteem or trauma or whatever. Time to put the addictive crutch down and look inside yourself for the answer, because the answer is somewhere inside your brain. And unless you fix this stuff that's messing with you, you're just going to symptom substitute till the cows come home. And taking some kind of pill is not the answer. Okay. And for those of you who don't know, if you've been on SSRIs for more than 3 to 5 years, there's a lot of research coming out that says SRIs are not the best things for folks to stay on long term, that they need to be rotating off those and looking at other methods to manage their depressive symptoms. And for those of you who don't know what the SSRIs are, they're things like Praxil, Prozac, and Zoloft, which are the most common ones you see. And there's people who have been on this thing for 10 or 12 or 15 years, and now research is saying, hey, maybe that's not such a good idea. Well, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's the thalidomide baby syndrome all over again, as far as I'm concerned. You know, better to heal yourself with natural stuff if you can, with, you know, eating properly, diet, exercise. If you need a boost, you know, herbal stuff or so-called natural vitamins as opposed to synthetic. And I don't care what the vitamin companies that are man-made try to tell you, you know, to quote a line from an old soul song, there ain't nothing like the real thing, baby. So believe what you want, but I can tell you, having taken nothing but quote-unquote natural vitamins since I was about 20, 21, you couldn't pay me to go on synthetic vitamins. No freaking way. And the purest formulary you can use, the better. Because you got to figure, if you're putting high test gas in your Jag or Mercedes or Ford or whatever you're driving, and you wouldn't think about putting sugar and crappy gas in your car, why are you putting crappy gas and sugar in your tank, right? I tell everybody, you know, you can buy another car if you're lucky. You can't buy another you, okay? So that stuff's expensive. That healthy food's expensive. Yeah, it is. Well, so is high-test gas. So what's your point? Okay, do you want the car to run well for a long period of time without getting rusty and dying before it's time? Do you want your body to get old before it's time? Feed your body right. Exercise right. Use stress management tools correctly, and you can extend midlife into the 80s. We already have known that 30 years ago. With certain kinds of diet and exercise, unless you have genetic foobars, you can enhance midlife functioning well into the 80s. But you have to do regular cardio stuff. You have to eat correctly. You have to take care of your body. You have to get a proper amount of sleep most of the night. You can't do a lot of drugs, alcohol stuff. You can't put a lot of sugar in your gas tank. You can't smoke cigarettes, yada, 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 yada. So all of that is kind of a lengthy way of saying that just because you come to the table with a one-down situation, whether it's addictions or cluster B personality disorders, and yes, friends, cluster B personality disorders also run on both sides of my family. My mom's side of the family tends to have the less malignant of those cluster Bs, the histrionic personality disorder. But my father's side has the nasty ones. They have the borderlines, the narcissist, and the antisocial. So, you know, this is not something you want to be practicing. And for the most part, I've dodged the cluster B bullet. I have my moments when I certainly get histrionic, and there's no way about it. But I'm constantly on my case trying to minimize my histrionic, as I call it, hissy shit fits, to a minimum, because you don't want to practice that stuff. It's too easy to get into a pattern of doing that stuff. And one of the things I decided for myself growing up with a narcissistic, emotionally abusive parent, my father, was that I was never going to be like him. And thank God I haven't been. But, you know, so these people that say, oh, I was abused as a kid, I had an asshole for a parent, my parents drank alcohol, what do you expect? I'm a mass murderer and a child molester and alcoholic. No, you chose to do those things. I'm sorry, it's still your responsibility. And that's my bottom line message here, folks. You know, environments can certainly encourage us to do bad things. And if you put somebody in crazy enough environments, and we're talking crazy, crazy, you know, being locked in a closet every day for, you know, 30 years, getting the crap beat out, and you know, fed rat turds or whatever, yeah, you're going to cause the brain to rewire. You're going to do crazy shit. If you live in a bomb zone 24/7, you know, your brain is going to get shocked from early on. It's not going to develop correctly. You're going to have some problems growing up. But when you get to a point where you know better, all you got to do is to stop that process, or to help ameliorate, minimize, get over that process, is look at your stuff and work on yourself. You can't use that stuff as an excuse. You know, you can't say, oh, well, cluster B personality disorders run in my family, you know, and I have a tendency, I inherited the tendency for that. Okay, well, that's great that you know that. Now get off your butt and do something about it. You know, if you know you have an addictive type nature, you know, make sure that you take steps not to do anything too much, whether that addictive behavior is, you know, texting or sexting or porn or eating popcorn or, you know, buying baseball trading cards or whatever. You got to put a lid on your id. You got to manage it. That's your responsibility. You can't use genetics as an excuse. You can't, what do you expect? You know, my father beat me and tortured me, so I go out and abduct two people and torture them and beat them. What do you expect? I expect you to learn from his mistakes and do better. The same thing I did for my dad. Okay? Abuse is not an excuse, people. Right? Now, you may have some genetic dillies that make it harder to do that, but every one of us who isn't brain damaged, who doesn't have some kind of serious brain wiring issue, has the ability to know that stuff isn't right. And if you can remember, if you know, God forbid, but if you're one of those folks that had some nasty stuff done to you for whatever reason, my heart really goes out to you, and I'm not being funny, but think about how you felt with all that shit happening to you. You don't want to recapitulate that stuff. That's not a great idea. You don't want to spread the pain. This is not good news, right? So if you know that you have things that run in your family, like bipolar disorder, like ADHD, like depression, like addictions, right, like schizophrenia, you know, you don't want to be doing psychedelic drugs, right? Psychedelic drugs mimic schizophrenia in the brain. You don't want to be giving the brain any extra help getting to the schizophrenic end of the spectrum there, right? You don't want to be doing hallucinogenic stuff, whether they're shrooms or pot. And yes, pot's a hallucinogen. I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. What's the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana? That's right, tetra-9-delta-hydrocannabinol, THC. What class of drugs does THC fall under? Hallucinogens, okay? So, say no more, eh? So, don't do that stuff. If you know you have a tendency for depression, don't do central nervous system depressants. If you're going to do drugs, don't do alcohol. Don't be a dumbass, right? You are encouraging your body to develop depression wiring. This is a bad idea. You have the power. You know, you guys and gals have heard me say this before. Every one of you listening to these podcasts has the power. Do not give your flipping power away, whether it's to Jesus, God, Buddha, Satan, Allah, me, your doctor, your lawyer, your wife, your son, your kid, your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband. Do not give your flipping power away to anybody. Reclaim it. You own it. Reclaim it. Use it. Use it wisely. Every one of us has untold power in our brains. That's one thing I try to convey to the kids when I run groups at what I jokingly refer to as the bad boy school, where I work on occasion running various groups teaching kids how to use their brain, most of whom have never used their brain, which is why they ended up in the school to begin with, but I digress. And the problem is a lot of them don't really believe it. And of course, as one of my friends and mentors said many years ago, as you believe, so shall you do. And too bad I didn't listen to him sooner. And too bad these kids ain't listening to me sooner, because they just kind of look at me and roll their eyes. And I'm like, listen, people, you can make yourself totally stoned using your brain. Now, what do you think these people do when they meditate? What do you think you're doing when you're calming yourself down and using self-relaxing tools or progressive muscle relaxation or self-hypnosis? You're changing brain chemistry. If you do it over time, you are creating new neural pathways. You are forcing your brain to create new highways, new pathways that will cause it to feel better and think better. You don't want to encourage it to think messed up at least by lounging around in your anxiety or encouraging your depression or engaging in your addictive behaviors or not somehow managing your ADHD or your schizophrenia or whatever, right? The responsibility belongs to each one of us, right? We are not responsible. And one of the kids at the Bad Boy School asked me just this last week, well, you know, so what you're telling me is that if I have XYZ, and my parents have it, that some of this, like ADHD, for example, is a genetic thing, that if I have ADHD, it's really not my fault. And my response to this person was, look, I'm not looking to blame anybody. You know, first of all, if you want to know the cause of ADHD, we already know, at least to the best of our scientific abilities at present, this is a genetically predetermined, not predisposition, predetermined disorder. So if you have the genetic, if you have the gene that expresses ADHD, you're going to get it. This is not a choice. The choice is what you're going to do about it. How are you going to manage it? And so what I told this person was, look, I'm not looking, you know, let's get the word fault out of here. I'm not looking to blame anybody, whether it's you, society, God, your parents, whatever. I'm looking to solve a problem or manage a problem, what I call damage control. So you already got ADHD. We know that from your behavior, right? Which means you got it from somebody in your family, all right? So welcome to the wonderful world of genetics, okay? But that doesn't mean you just throw your hands up and go, okay, well, I've got it, so that means I can be a pain in the ass at home, and I can run around and scream in group, and I can talk to my friends in class, and the teacher has to excuse me because I have ADHD. No. Now, what that means is that's an explanation for your behavior, and now you got to work 3 to 5 times harder than the average Joe or Jolene to do the same shit that they do without all the extra effort. Welcome to reality. The same shit I have to do with my glasses, right? So as I've gotten older, right, I've been wearing glasses forever, probably since I was, I don't know, really young. Gosh, at least since I was, you know, 10 or 11 years old. And my eyes have not gotten better with age. And now I'm suffering from presbyopia, right? Which is my lenses in my eyes don't readjust really well. So I have glasses for short throw, and what I call short throw, not to read, because I can read without glasses, but like for 3 feet away. And I have glasses for long throw, anything longer than about 3 to 5 feet, right? Now I could try the progressive lenses like some of my buddies do, but those things I find just uber annoying. You have no peripheral vision. It makes me dizzy, and it's just like, screw this shit, right? And my guys are going, oh, just wear them for a couple of weeks. You'll get used to it. Oh, no, I'm not getting used to shit. You get used to it, okay? I'll buy 2 pair of glasses. So that's what I did, right? So I have a short throw pair that I'm actually wearing as we speak, and I have a long throw pair that I use to look at TV or, you know, see anybody more than 5 feet in front of me so they don't, I know that they're not rock, mineral, vegetable, whatever, right? That's just the nature of the beast, and I'm the only lucky person in either of my family that has these crappy eyes, so I don't know where the heck this happened. This, you know, I'm evidently some optic nerve genetic brain fart here, but the reality is, you know, I'm not looking to be pissed off at God or my genes or my Calvin Kleins or anything else. Yeah, thank you. I'll be here all week. You know, the reality is I got what I got, and I have a choice. I can choose to try to fix them through laser surgery if I have the money and the balls and the desire, which I don't, any of the aforementioned categories. Thank you very much. B, if I really believe it'll work, which I'm not so sure. And, you know, or I can do glasses, which I do, or I can not do anything and suffer and bitch about it and be miserable. You know, that's not, and be blind at the same time. Can't see more than, you know, 6 inches, 8 inches in front of my face. That doesn't work for me. So I talk about life handing everybody challenges, whether your challenge is ADHD, bad eyesight, this annoying sleep disorder I have that keeps me up till 4, 5, or 6 in the morning and in bed till 1 or 2 in the afternoon, right? Listen, guys and gals, I don't like this sleep disorder, but the reality is I got it. It's incurable. I'm not taking sleeping pills because they have a high addiction potential. I don't, you know, and they said, oh, Ambien, it's not habit-forming. Oh, you're like, yeah, right. Now, you said that shit about Paxil and Prozac 20-something years ago, too, that that was safe, and yeah, right. And let me know when Elvis gets here. So I'm just, you know what, I'm just going to be sleepy, and occasionally I'm going to be insomniatic, and I'm just going to be grumpy and just deal with it, because that's better than the alternative for me. That's a life choice. But I'm not expecting anybody to solve my sleep disorder for me. I'm not expecting anybody to solve or pay for my glasses or my contact lenses or my surgery or what the heck ever. That's my responsibility. I got dealt a shitty set of eyes. Oh, boy. Well, you know what? Everybody's got something. I just got to deal with it. I don't like it, but the reality is, what am I going to do about it, right? I can bitch and scream and moan and cry and, you know, be pissy and renounce God and all my other stuff, and the reality is I'm still going to have bad eyes. Now what am I going to do, right? And I say the same thing to you people with cluster B personality disorders, the same thing with you people with bipolar or anything else. If you got one of these disorders, through however you got it, right, cope with it. I know it sucks, but cope with it. Do it the best you can. You owe it to yourself. You don't owe it to anybody else. You're not doing it for anybody else. It's like I tell people who want to get clean and sober. I'm getting clean and sober for my wife. I'm getting clean and sober for my kid. I'm getting clean and sober for my boyfriend. That's the wrong freaking person to get clean and sober for. Get clean and sober for yourself. Have some pride in yourself. have some ethics and self-love enough to do it for you, because God darn it, you're worth it. And I'm not saying that to be mean or funny or trite. I mean it. You have power. I'm going to say this again, people. Every one of you listening to this podcast has power. You have the power to manage your brain. Don't give it up to drugs, whether they're a prescription or not, if you can help it. And I'm not saying that nobody should ever do prescription drugs. Obviously, there's certain conditions that you have to be on drugs on. And if you're not going to moderate your diet and not going to exercise and not take healthy vitamins or minerals or whatever, then yeah, you're choosing to use drugs and risking your brain wiring. Well, you know, in some cases, we don't have any better options. That's what we got right now to deal with, and we just have to deal with it. But whatever it is you got to do to fix it that isn't going to kill you or make things worse, you owe it to yourself, God, the planet, your fellow man and woman, your dog, your cat, your gerbil, your hamster, your parrot, whatever, to do it. You have the power. Do not give your power away. I firmly believe that every one of us in the earshot of my voice, and those who have never heard of me and are hearing my voice or don't want to hear my voice, have power beyond that which we know, and we just don't use it. All right, we already know, we already heard all the stats about, you know, we use about a tenth or a twelfth of our brain. You know, I mean, there are so many things we could do that we don't do. Get off your complacency and start using your brain. Stop using the fact you were born into whatever as an excuse. You know, I know that life sucks for some of you, and I know it's really hard for some of you, and I'm not minimizing that. I'm really, really not. I feel really bad for folks, and I wish I could change that, but I'm not God. I can't go back and heal their past. All I can do is teach them how to move from this day forward and to be the best person they could possibly be. And they have the power to do that. Some of them need me to show them how, but every one of you has the power. I really believe that. Stop giving it away to somebody else, whether it's me or your husband or your boyfriend or the state or anybody. Don't give it away. Own it. Claim it. Learn how to use it. Everybody, with very, 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 very few exceptions, can do that. So my basic line here today is, right, if you have one of these disorders, you may come by it naturally. You may have had a genetic loading so that it made it easier for you, so to speak, to develop the disorder. You may have had a nasty set of environment circumstances that caused you to have it with no genetic predisposition, or you may have had both, right? And the reality is, you got it. Now you got to figure out how to fix it, reverse it, minimize it, and or operate the best you possibly can with it so that you're not using it as an excuse for failure. Don't give up on yourself. When you choose failure, when you choose an activity, you choose to let things get worse. If you're not moving forward, you're regressing, right? It's like I tell couples when I do couples therapy. Think of you guys as two plants growing next to each other in the same flower bed. Right, and if one plant's growing up and the other plant's not growing, by definition, you are growing apart. There's no choice in the matter. It's rules of nature, God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. And I didn't make the rules. I'm just the guy telling you the rules of engagement. The reality is, you got two flowers, and one's getting water and fertilizer and decides to make use of that and grow, and the other guy or gal is going, nope, I'm just going to hang out here. Those plants are growing apart. If they grow in different directions, they're growing apart. So you either have a choice when you're in a relationship with somebody, whether it's a friendship, parent, kid, married, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. If you're not growing together, you're growing apart. If one of you is growing and one of you is standing still, you're growing apart. If you're not growing with your brain, you're growing apart from yourself. You're becoming self-alienated. Don't become self-alienated. Use your power. Grow. Mature, be a role model and lighthouse for other people to see, particularly if you come from a background that's less than favorable, or if you come from an environment that's less than favorable. Use that as impetus to grow beyond your environment. And if you've been hurt by some people, whether it's physically or mentally or sexually or whatever, and you're angry at them, I get it. The best revenge you can get on those people who try to mess with you, whether it's professionally, physically, whatever, your best revenge is growing beyond them, because those people are in pain too, and they're not managing their own shit, and they're giving it to you, and shame on them for doing that. Shame on people who abuse their power, whether it's a parent or a state official or whomever. Shame on them. But if they're too stupid and small and low-moraled and spiritually regressed to do it, sucks to be them. The rule of nature is they're going to pay for that shit at some point, because as the TV show I've seen advertised so much would so eloquently say, karma's a bitch. And I firmly believe that as in nature, you can't muck with Mother Nature. If you disbalance your biochemistry of your brain or your body, you're going to have to pay for it somewhere. Right? You can either exercise when you're younger and stretch your life out and you're functioning, or you can eat like shit and sit on your ass and have all kinds of problems later on. There ain't no free rides. You can put out the energy now and reap the benefits currently and later, or you can be a lazy slug and pay the price later when you hook it to a heart-lung machine or tubes up your nose or whatever body part they're up. Right? There is no free ride, and I really believe that for people who go out of their way to make life miserable for other people, whether it's legally, professionally, spiritually, sexually, physically, nationally, whatever. These folks, in my personal opinion, are going to have to pay the piper at some point down the road, right? And that's not my business. That's the business of nature, God, Allah, whatever. And I don't muck with that force's business, because that force is a lot smarter than I am. So I'm just doing what I can do as a human being, the best I can possibly do. And the best I can do to honor myself and nature is to do the best I can with what I got. And if I get handed a hand that sucks, I have to drive beyond it. I have to go as much as I can. I have to push the limits as much as I can to grow beyond that and to accommodate the best I can to be the best functioning person for me. To honor myself, and in doing so, honoring nature, God, whatever you want to call it. And I really mean that. That, for me, is my gift to both myself and the force, nature, society, whatever, right? And while I may not really give two flips about what other people think or society thinks or anything else, and I really don't, I also consider it my moral and spiritual imperative to try to leave this place a little bit better than when I got it. And even though I'm just one insignificant pissant guy doing his thing, I'm doing the best I can do. And if my brief vibrations in the big cosmic whirlpool, so to speak, the big cosmic lake, if my little teeny, you know, ant-sized pebble causes any teeny ripple in the lake to make it better or to motivate somebody else to be better and do their things, that's the coolest thing on the planet. So I'll tell you folks, whatever you have, whether it's addictive tendencies or cluster B personality tendencies or anxiety, depression, whatever, rise above it and deal with it as best you possibly can. Right? And that's my message. It's not one thing, it's a combination of things. So when you look at these people who go, oh, well, you know, this person was raised in a, you know, hole and blah, 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 and that's why they went out and killed 39 million people. Well, and I know plenty of people who were raised in a hole, so to speak, and they're not out there doing that shit. Right? Why? Because they have different personalities, they have different constitutions, they have different levels of resiliency. Right? Own your stuff. Don't try to blame anybody else for it. And if you've got something, whether it's a bad situation or a bad genetic situation or both, try to find a way to rise above it. You can do it. Don't use it as an excuse for misbehavior. Right? It's never an excuse. All you're doing is passing the buck to the next generation, and you don't want to be doing that. So my bottom line is, it's not just nature, it's not just nurture, it's both. It's some kind of unusual, if you will, cosmic combination of these things that makes people do or not do what they're going to do or not going to do. But it also takes integrity and willpower and that nasty four-letter word, that's right, work, oh my God, he said it again, right, to rise above that stuff. But in doing so, I believe that it makes every one of us a better person, regardless of what situation we're rising above. So take the bull by the horns. Don't use it as an excuse. Claim your power, do in the work, and rise above it no matter who knows it, sees it, or pats you on the back, because you're really not doing it for anybody. You're doing it for you, because you are worth it to honor yourself and everybody that came before you, and everybody's going to use you as a role model. And the universe itself, that's your gift back to nature. So kick ass and take names at all times, regardless of your situation. And if you're one of those lucky stiffs that are born with a silver spoon in your mouth, so to speak, with no genetic predispositions, well, you know what? God bless you, and I'm happy for you. For the rest of us schmucks, get off your patootie and start working. And it's never too late to start. Thanks, and I wish all of you only the best. I'll see you next time.